everyone, and welcome to Rewatchable number 174. Today we are going to be talking about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Season 4, Episode 7, The Initiative, and Angel, Season 1, Episode 7, The Bachelor Party. As usual, if you would like to get in touch with us, please hit us up on our email at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com, on Twitter at re_watchable, this post on Hypebol.com, or find us at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com, and please keep everything spoiler-free for our newbies. I am Karen, and today I'm joined by Caitlin, Brittany, and Mitch. Hi, everyone.
Hello.
Hi.
We are going to kick it off with fun facts, and because I haven't thought of one yet, I'm going to pass it over to Caitlin.
Oh, well, thanks for that. My fun fact is that I finished my summer teaching job today, and yay. I got presents from a couple of the kids, which was really cool.
How cute.
So that was a fun surprise, and I'm done with my massive summer of working. It's so nice to not have more of that coming, because it's been a very, very long summer, and I'm very tired.
You've been so busy. It's crazy. Yeah. I feel like you're always working. All right.
I'm going to miss the stories. Those were so good, Caitlin.
Yeah.
The stories your kids would write, they're amazing.
They're cute. Brittany, what about you?
Well, I am back from London. I saw The Cursed Child, and it was incredible, and I am still refusing to read it because I just liked the play so much. And wow. Now I'm suffering from a post-travel cold where the heat index is 115 degrees and humid. It's not fun. So, yeah, I've just been staying inside and avoiding the outside world for a while. But I'm happy to be back in the States.
Aww. Yeah, you shared your cold with Danielle, except you guys live, you know, halfway across the country from each other, but she's sick after her trip too.
It was Heathrow Airport, I'm telling you. We both left from Heathrow Airport, mm-hmm. and we both got sick. Blaming
Heathrow. Oh, that's it.
There you go.
Got a connection.
And Mitch?
My fun fact is that I am visiting my family in Albany, New York, back to my roots, because I have a very painful, apparently, surgery coming up. Brittany can attest to that or not, because she also had her tonsils taken out. And I wanted to enjoy my life before I can't for a little bit. Because I like hot and spicy foods and sour foods, and I like chips and whatnot, and those aren't going to happen for a while. So I'm here eating a whole bunch, running around like crazy. I might see Brittany, maybe. No, I won't. She's not going to be in New York City when I'm visiting there. So boo on you, Brittany.
I'm sorry. Oh.
You should get better quicker. Come on. This is not okay. You do not have the rights to not be around me.
I got a little homesick when you said you were visiting Albany, because I am also from upstate, which Mitch obviously knows, but our listeners might. And not that we ever lived like super close to each other, but there's some camaraderie in living outside of New York City.
You can relate to the Capital District. I think that's close enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My fun fact is a bit random, but last night I stayed up till about 1 or 2 in the morning finishing the first series of Luther, which stars Idris Elba, and it was really good. The last two episodes were really intense, and I quite like it. So it's really
what
short.
What did he do in Luther?
He gets very angry and beats people up and catches bad guys. It's actually really great.
Is this like, what is it, like a Sherlock kind of thing?
It feels very much like Sherlock, but it's got some elements that are quite different. And the characters are just really good. The mysteries are good. And he's fantastic as Luther. So
he's a great actor.
Yeah. I'll be starting series 2 soon, which is only 4 episodes. So I'll probably get through them quickly. But yes, very good. All right. Let's talk about some Buffy, though. We're going to talk about episode 407, The Initiative. In this episode, shit finally gets interesting when we find out that Wonder Bread Boy Riley is actually a secret demon hunting agent with a heart of gold. Meanwhile, Spike escapes from the Initiative and tries to hunt down Buffy, but when it's time to do the deed, he can't get it up. First point here is that Oz is out of the credits and Spike is in. What do you guys think of that?
First thing I noticed. Absolutely. I love credit intros. I love the shots they use. I love seeing who's in what. It's like a thing that I've always been really in tune with. So thank you, Ariana, for being on the same page as me here. That's a big deal. Like, Oz is doing more here now, Britt, right? Like, he's not going to just be an auxiliary villain anymore. He's in it to win it.
You mean Spike? Spike.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Spike, not Oz. Because Oz is no longer in it to win it. He's done. Like, they really killed him off here almost. It was just like, when's Oz coming back? I guess not this season.
I think it was a beautiful love story. He left with his one true love, his van. And they're going to live a happy life together somewhere. Kicking ass and, you know, he could do a lot with that van. So I think Oz will be fine. Plus, the show is getting a little mopey for me, and I had to catch up from last week's episode. So I watched the whole like Willow and Oz thing unfold, and it was really sad and heartbreaking. And then you had mopey Willow this episode. And I had tweeted while I was watching, and I was like, I was so done with this episode and so bored. And then Spike showed up, and I was like, thank goodness, because I feel like I'm being dragged through this melodrama and it's driving me crazy. Mm. And then Spike was there and he was all sassy and ridiculous, and he was the perfect counter to Willow's sadness. And so I'm excited to take a break from the Oz and Willow saga, even though it is really sad, but their relationship was really bringing me down the past couple of episodes just because it was too perfect. And then it was like a cheating story. And then I'm not really into werewolf mythology. So that was like, meh, I don't know what's going on. So yeah, I'm really pumped that Spike is in and Oz is out, at least for a little bit. Like, Oz can come back, but I'm glad Spike's back in the picture for a while.
Mm-hmm. And I agree with you, Britt. His sassiness was well needed here because I was kind of getting bored. I agree. And this like stuff about Parker and then Oz and Willow breaking up, it just felt like everyone was just sad, depressed, and like, you know, what is it? Giles and Xander don't seem to have a purpose. It's like, what's going on in the show anymore, really, at all? But this episode picks it up with Spike. It picks it up with, I think they're called the Initiative. They don't actually say it. Do they? Maybe I missed it. I don't know. It's a good name for them, if not. So we're going to have to call them that, I guess, Britt. I mean, is that a super fan thing that you know? Is it like a spoiler to another name, or?
They're the Initiative.
They're the Initiative.
Yeah, and Kristen is so proud that she called that last week. She was just doing a little dance, so I'm
that
glad.
Good
that,
of her.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Her and I were both right, because I was saying it was romantic, like someone's taking the initiative to come up to Buffy, probably Riley. And I think that was maybe what I said. I don't know. But she was so dead on. I was so proud of her, too, because I feel like it's weird because it's not even like we watch a lot of TV and these are things that are predictable. It's almost like we're telling the future with really strange things like Oz and Veruca happening. Like, that was just weird. Like, we had it almost down to like the baby ripping out of her stomach. We were pretty close.
But not quite. Let's just start that out there. Caitlin, I want to get your thoughts, because does it break your heart every time Oz leaves, or have you kind of gotten used to that? And does Spike coming back in sort of make that better for you?
Oh, Oz leaving destroys me, because I love Oz, so losing him always makes me sad, but we need the levity, and Spike is good for that. So I am happy to get some uptick in levity with Spike coming in more. I think we can assume from him being in the credits that he'll be around a lot more.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point about the levity. And Brittany, you brought up, you know, that the show has been very mopey lately. I think this episode did a lot to bring it back up, not just because of Spike, who's always fantastic and always has a zinger in his back pocket, but we see Harmony again, and she has a slap fight with Xander, and it was like, the show is so ridiculous, but it works. I mean, maybe that's just me saying that, but it's the perfect tone, I think, for particularly those two characters who are sometimes very incompetent, and for them to have a slap fight, you're just like, well, yeah, of course that just happened.
And it's framed, like, making it look really epic, like slow motion and, like, dramatic music. And then you just go back to them, like, slap, 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 and pulling hair. Oh, it's the best.
Well, because, like, at first I thought, should I be scared for Xander here? And then I was like, no, this is Harmony. She's a flop. She's not a very good vampire. We're okay.
What did you think about that scene, Brittany?
I loved when it broke down and it was just, like, them, like, just hitting each other because, you know, Giles leaves and you're like, oh, God, Xander's left to his own devices, which is going to be a disaster. And then just to have these two characters just really show how ineffective they are with each other. And, like, the talk beforehand where he's like, I'll stake you right now. And she's like, I'll drain your blood or whatever. Like, you know, they're, like, talking all tough and stuff, but they both know that they're just, like, equally matched in awfulness. So, yeah, that was another, like, really great moment of levity in this season. Because I don't really like Harmony that much either. She annoys me. And Xander has been much better than he's been in the past season. So just to have those two sort of, you know, restate their purpose in the episodes was really funny.
Yeah, I always am very curious about how newbies feel about the humor in this show because it can, I mean, this is sort of like, it's a stupid scene. It really is, but it just has that right kind of tone that fits the show and honestly just makes me laugh my head off. So I'm glad that you guys are kind of feeling it that way too and you've come to expect this sort of thing and it doesn't feel like too ridiculous for the overall tone of the show.
No, but I think it does a great job because it's planted so early on in the series that yes, this show is about vampires and weird demons and it can be hilarious. And that tone really, really shifted to Angel once we got past the first crossover. And I've been waiting for it to come back into Buffy because I've missed it so much. And watching Angel versus Buffy, it's been like, wow, I'm liking Angel a lot more because it's funny and his character is funny. And, you know, it was just much more entertaining. Now that the humor's coming back to Buffy, I'm like, okay, I can enjoy these episodes a little more, even with, like, you know, the bigger drama that Buffy offers. Like, I missed the humor a lot, and I'm glad it's back.
Yeah, good. And while we're on the topic of Xander, I particularly want to get your thoughts on Xander and Giles hanging out once again, because I know you really like that dynamic. What did you think about them in this episode?
Okay, I'll just jump right ahead to my favorite scene. It is any scene with these two together, because I feel like the whole episode was trying to find its footing with reintroducing Spike and having all this stuff, but also planting the groundwork for if Buffy fails epically at season 4, they have the potential to have a Giles and Xander spinoff, and I think it would work. And I just, any time that Giles is sitting in his apartment and all of a sudden it pans over and Xander's there, I'm like, all right, this is perfect. I love that they just, like, they don't like each other, but they realize that at some moments in time, they're all each other has, and they sort of gravitate to one another. I loved it so much, especially when Xander was explaining how he wants to, you know, they can rise and, like, bring up a demon, and then they all have to fight them, and they could be heroes, and Giles, like, kind of half considers it, and it's like, maybe that's a little too far.
Caitlin, as a super fan, how do you feel about this dynamic?
I think it's great, and it's not one I ever gave that much thought to, but the older I get and the more I am turning into Giles, like, it's very funny, but it's also interesting in a way because it's sort of like Giles and Xander are the outsiders at this point because neither of them have a place at the college the way, you know, Giles had his librarian job at the high school. So we've gone from them having a place, everyone in the library, to splintering off a bit and there not being a place for everybody at the college. And now with even Oz leaving, the college is even becoming less of an in-group or whatever. So you've got, you know, kind of the outsiders and Xander and Giles in one place, and you've got Buffy and Willow at school. And it's just kind of interesting to see Giles gravitate towards the outsider with Xander when you expect Giles to be incredibly useful and Xander probably not to be. And then you've got the two of them because somehow they don't fit, which is strange and also fitting.
Yeah. And it's funny because Giles and Xander never really got along that well. I mean, out of, like, the trio, he was not that close to Xander compared to Willow and Buffy, who had very strong connections with, you know, Buffy because she's the Slayer and he's the Watcher, and Willow because I think her intelligence, her devotion to the group and to the cause and everything. And Xander always kind of was, you know, floating around there. And the fact that they kind of team up these days is both hilarious, but also kind of nice just to see that development in their friendship.
And part of what I find weird about this relationship is that it feels like they never dropped the other shoe with Giles and Buffy leaving the Watchers Council. That it happened and it was kind of a big deal, but then it wasn't. And it's weird that she's able to run around Rogue and he's able to run around, I guess, he's fine because he doesn't really have, I don't know, like a designation that he needed to be a Watcher. It's just something he signed up for, as far as I understand, not as much as his destiny as hers. So that's where I'm confused here, because I feel like, I don't know, maybe there's like, what if Giles just had a blood oath or something we don't know about? Something supernatural that gets him part of the Watchers Council. That would be more interesting to me here. It would feel like there was more of a plot going on if that got Giles back into our supernatural world, because let's say they had to try and break the blood oath. I don't know. Write something in that makes it important that they left the Watchers Council in the end of season 3. That did not matter anymore. They're doing the same job they would have done otherwise. Buffy's still reports back to him, but she didn't seem to be training with him, so I don't know what's going on with that. I don't know if I'm meant to be noticing that she's not training anymore. Maybe that's just being ignored, or it's just not, it's not shown. I don't know what's going on with that, but the whole dynamic of the show is changing now that we don't have the Watchers Council in a way that's subtle, but I wanted it to be bigger. Brittany, did you expect it to be a bigger deal that Giles is no longer a Watcher anymore?
I don't think so, because we kind of had that replacement Watcher Wesley for a while, and then I felt like it was a natural storyline to step away from when she left high school, because it felt like a very high school thing, like, oh, I have this parental guidance counselor type person, and now I'm in the real world, and, well, you know, as real world as college can be. And I don't have that person I need to report to anymore, and I need to learn to do things on my own. And she still goes to Giles, and I just don't think we need that hanging over our heads anymore. So I kind of forgot about it, to be completely honest, just because I felt like it was a natural step away from that whole storyline and into something new.
Maybe what I need is to see how the Slayer gets their powers, more of just the calling. Showing like kind of like the Spider-Man moment, you know, when Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man wakes up one morning, he's much more muscular and he can like shoot webs from his hands. Cool. I want to see Buffy have that moment too. I want to see that in a flashback, or I want to see, because I'm confused, because it seems like Kendra has been training for this her whole life, as was Faith, but then Buffy wasn't. It's just weird. I don't get it. I don't get how the Watchers Council works still. I don't get how the Slayer is betrothed her power. I need to understand more of that. This is still very fuzzy to me, and I wonder if we're meant to get into that later, or if this is just meant to be, at this point, season 4, like a mythical thing happens in the background and don't worry about it. Because it still feels, even though we're done with the Watchers Council, like they're this obscure thing. Like, we have Wesley that kind of presents it, and there's two other guys who wanted her to fight the roided up vampire that said no one lives past 17. That gives us a bit more of a guideline for why she's out of this now. I agree that it's natural for it to be written off, but I feel like it might come back, because I feel like we still need to learn more about them.
I bet it's in the comics.
That sounds like a comics thing. It really does.
Well, I will say, the mythology of the Slayer is woven throughout the series as a whole. You will learn more. I don't know if you're going to learn, you know, everything that you want to know about, but there, in the series, like, yes, there's more information in outside sources, but in the series, there is more to come, and I think you're going to find it interesting. So just hang on and we'll get there. But
that's what I need. That's kind of like in like Korra, where we wanted, like, you know, Tenzin and Lin when they were kids, like that series. Mm-hmm. Like, I kind of want like the pre-Buffy series now. Like, I'm feeling that.
That would be pretty cool. If I don't get the Ripper series, you don't get the pre-Buffy
series. Yeah, the Ripper series, essentially.
Okay, so we have to talk about Spike in this episode. It was a very Spike-centric episode and really interesting developments. Also really, really funny dynamic between Spike and Willow, and that Spike tries to attack Willow, but he can't because he has a chip in his head that stops him from hurting people. And I just want to know, like, first off, newbies, were you afraid for Willow? Like, do you feel like Spike was a threat that maybe, you know, maybe he could have killed Willow?
Like, the cut of the scene made it seem like she was bit. I'm pretty sure there was even, like, a squelch sound effect. And I was like, Willow was just bitten by Spike. This is it. She's done. And I was like, what? That's weird. It feels like she's a lot more plot to go. I just broke her up with Oz for a reason, right? But, you know, I'm happy she's good.
Yeah, I didn't think that Spike was that much of a threat, but I wasn't sure if it was a chip in the head or, like, what was going on with him, but I knew that he wouldn't be able to attack her. I thought maybe it would be, like, you know, he had a little bit of a soul for a second and would be like, no, you know what, you're more useful to me in another way and all this stuff, but I really didn't think that her life was in danger at all, but I'm so happy with the way it played out. Because it was just perfect.
Are we going to keep the chip in the head? Do you think that that's going to be a thing, Britt? Or are they going to, like, for some reason, be forced to take it out? Like, he'll hold someone hostage, but he can't hurt someone. But can he compel? Some vampires seem to be able to compel, and that could be a power he could still use. Wow. He could say, my vampire lackey will hurt you unless you take this chip out of my head, Willow, or whoever's able to.
I think he'll keep the chip in his head, and then he'll come to see the error of his bad vampire ways, and then they'll take the chip out, and then he'll be warm and fuzzy Spike for the rest of this time. But, like, not too warm and fuzzy, like Angel warm and fuzzy, because then I would just quit the show and come back when Rewatchable changes to a different show, because I would not be able to handle two vampires going soft on me. I can't. It would just crush my soul. So he still needs to be, like, keep his personality, but yeah, I think that he'll come to learn the error of his ways. Because I don't think having a chip in him would be, it just wouldn't be useful for the plot, because it would be like, oh, but he's not really being himself. He's being controlled by something outside. And I think we need Spike to have this, like, moment of, oh, I may not have a soul, but I can still, like, you know, use my free will to not kill people. Sort of like he did when he just wanted to get out with Drew. He chose to work with Buffy, mm-hmm. even though it was his ultimate goal.
Buffy and Angel during that brawl.
Yeah. You know, like, yeah. I just think that having the chip in forever would be awful, but it could be a good test.
Because we can't keep it in, because I see where you're going, because I'm with you that he has to learn a lesson from it, but he can't stay in. And I didn't see this at first because I didn't put two and two together, but they must be going towards Spike is eventually going to be a good guy. If he's in the credits, like, he's not going to stay a villain. I feel like Spike now is making a turn for good, and that's going to come maybe. I mean, if they're going to integrate him into the Scoobies, it's like his helpfulness will come from his fighting ability. So he can't keep it in just for that fact. And also for the fact that it's a boring thing to have a character who can't hurt anyone at all. That's like, okay, so what do you do now? There's no drama you can be involved in. You just you can't even, like, fight for us or against us. So what's your purpose?
And plus, he has to go to Angel at some point because he's in the cover photo for the entire series on Netflix.
On Netflix. Yeah.
I'm like, no, he's not just stopping by for that one episode with the ring. Like, he's got to come back. And if he's, like, still trying to be a big bad with Angel, I don't think I could tolerate that because they're funny together and I kind of want them to work together. But that's just in my own head.
Let me proposition this. Bad Angel, good Spike.
Don't tease me.
Good Spike, bad Angel. So Angelus is back, but Spike has to stop him.
Oh, ooh. I would love it. I think that would be top 5 fanfic I would read right now.
Okay. Caitlin and I are just no commenting the heck over here. So, Caitlin, I know that this is your favorite scene, so I'm going to just pause this conversation for a little bit. We'll get back to you soon, and then you can wax poetic about that. It'll be great.
I would like to add something about whatever the chip is, or the implant, mm-hmm. is that Riley specifically says that he can't harm a living creature.
So he can still go after Angelus, and my wish fulfillment can come true.
So we're good. He can fight for the Scoobies. He doesn't need to get it taken out.
As long as they're fighting things that aren't living.
I just don't see what his error of his ways thing is going to be. Is it going to be Willow? Is she going to keep this like shtick going with him? Where she'll be like, I know, it feels disappointing that you can't do the things you used to be able to do kind of thing. Or I don't get it. Like, where's his gateway to get in with the Scoobs?
Oh, does that mean he could still kill Harmony? Because that would be great.
Well,
I don't see her sticking around for much longer. Maybe that much.
I mean, I would live for the slap fights with Xander, though. Let's just be real. They could do that every episode, and I'd still laugh. Okay, Caitlin, I also really want to get your thoughts on Riley, but before we go there, I just want to talk to the newbies first, because we have clearly developed our feelings over quite a long time. So, Brittany, did you like Riley before, and what are your thoughts on Riley after this episode, and how shocked were you about this twist?
I did like Riley before. We didn't really know much about Riley, but he was, you know, had that cute 90s middle part going on and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So I was a pretty big fan of Riley because, you know, well, he's whatever. And this episode, I thought it was really cute how he wanted to get to know Buffy and he was a little jealous and he punched out Parker, which we've all been wanting to do. And he had the cube of cheese and that was adorable. But then once they went downstairs, I this whole institute thing, I was like, are you kidding me? I wouldn't care if they were like a bunch of like rogue, like non-scientific-y type people who, like, you know, they were just like, you know, we know that there's something amok and like we're more, you know, not sterile about the way that they hunted these people.
Like the white hats?
Yeah.
In the Wishverse?
Yeah. So like this, I don't know. They like this whole operation was just very, it didn't fit any of their personalities. Like I still like the way that they were still joking with one another in the like the weird elevator, mirror elevator and stuff like that. But once they got downstairs, I was like, this is not the Riley that I like. I did, however, counter to that, like the sweaty Riley at the end in his like army gear. I was like, all right, that Riley is fine. But
he went from like Wonder Bread to Wonder Boy. It was amazing.
What was going on? I was so...
I swear he like sexed himself up for this episode because he was so bland before. And now he's like, you know, like all like glistening and like his hair is pushed back. And it's just, it's such a transformation and it's such a good transformation.
Yeah. So I'm definitely down with like demon hunting Riley, but I don't like the initiative as a construct. Like I just think it's weird. And it does make sense that, you know, the psychology professor is running it and she's really interested in human personalities and blah, 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 is drawn to Bluffy. Like, I'm sure that's all fine and great. But I feel like the initiative is what people think of when they say they don't like season four. And maybe I'm getting ahead of myself and maybe it ends next episode. I have no idea. But I'm not a huge fan of it so far. Still like Riley. I mean, not a fan of the initiative.
It could be that Spike sticks around that people don't like just in the same right, or both.
That's very true. It could be that they don't like Spike, but I doubt that that's a thing.
Yeah, he seems like a fan favorite no matter what. James Marsters in general seems to do a really good job at Spike, so.
He's lovely. Mitch, have your thoughts on Riley changed, and were you surprised that he was part of the initiative?
Pleasantly surprised. It was wonderful. I'm with Brittany. It was all about the sweat. I am all about the sweat. Come on. Like, props to whoever was just like, we need to miss them before this scene, because that's what sold me on Riley. I can see why Buffy would ever be interested in him, because it's almost like they wrote him to be more interesting and sexier, and the actor had that potential, but they just didn't do it. And then finally, the makeup and the costuming team caught up to the scripts and learned, like, oh, we should probably make him look a little bit, like, more interesting and not just, like, wear the most bland gray sweaters with the most bland vacant expressions on his face, doing absolutely nothing but getting hit in the head with books.
Yeah. Shout out to Giles's turtleneck this episode, by the way.
And all of his sweaters. He had like a great purple sweater in the beginning that, oh, it was so great. Also, I think another thing with Riley that I do like that they're doing is how Buffy doesn't know that it's Riley, because I think that that's going to keep this storyline at least more interesting for me for right now. Like, I don't really care about what like the mythology or whatever you want to call it part of the initiative is. I do like that Buffy is not exact, like there was like all that fog and she couldn't, no one could see each other and they weren't sure who was who, and like there's kind of like this cat and mouse thing going on and they don't know who they're fighting or anything that's really going on there, which is kind of interesting. But I then again don't want it to lead to another, oh, everyone in my life turns on me and I'm so sad and I'm just gonna sit here and wear overalls and cry. I can't do another boy drama thing like that.
I see it being more like You've Got Mail, like thought they were enemies, like on one hand, or even just like any superheroes that do that. Sometimes it happens, right? In superhero shows, they're like fighting each other while they're in costume, but then when they're normal civilians, they're in love. I love that kind of stuff.
I also think it's interesting because they're doing this, like they're fighting, not exactly fighting, but like they're working on the same team kind of, whereas his side is studying and her side is just killing. So there could be some common ground there. It's not that he's hunting the Slayer, which is a good thing, I think. Although once he finds out about the Slayer, like, then that professor might want to study her. So
shouldn't he be like hunting Willow to that rate?
Not yet, because Willow's not really like,
because she was contaminated was the issue here. That's why he was trying to kill her, and then
he's like, no, we can't. Was contaminated. I think it was just because she saw everything.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, so that makes me feel like she's even more of a target now. Brittany, don't make me worry even more for my day.
she was a witness.
He said she could still turn. That's what he said. Which sounds.
But I'm with Brittany that being a witness is probably also another issue.
They haven't invented those Men in Black laser things yet.
Although they did come up with the good story, I guess it's a good story, of the fraternity prank. Isn't that what they called it?
Yeah.
Well, it's better than a gas leak, I guess. Yeah. I mean, if they said another, it was another gas leak.
Okay, Caitlin, just this episode. How do you feel about Riley? Because I think this is the first time we actually see who he is as a person.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because the episode opens with him, which, you know, we're like, oh, all of a sudden we're paying attention to Riley. Okay, and we see a couple of his friends, which, okay, we're going to start to get to know him a little better, which is good. And I like that it takes us through. I've always liked the initiative twist. Like, I think it's a good one. And I've always liked the idea of the initiative. So I'm intrigued by it and where the potential dynamics could be. And that, like, in a way, it seems to me like a way to sort of, I don't know, like, make him compatible with Buffy's life in a way that he couldn't be. So, like, I feel weird saying, but like sort of angel-fying him in a way that he can be like a compatible boyfriend with her demon hunting life in that way. True. But it's interesting and it gives us a new layer to him. I don't know if it tells us much more about his personality. I feel the personality remains pretty consistent, but it does give us a new wrinkle to what he is up to. And I do appreciate that.
Yes, I will have to say that the bench scene in this episode is iconic for me in terms of Riley's character and the initiative. It just has always stuck out in my mind. And I just love that they're fighting, like, you go away. No, you go away. No, let me walk you home. Well, why can't I walk you home? And all of a sudden somebody screams. They're both like, bye. And it's so funny, but it just, like you said, it's this. They're compatible, but they don't realize it yet, and I find that very interesting. And then last question for this episode, I want to ask you guys, how competent do you think the initiative is? Because we got that comment from Riley about, you know, Willow could still turn. And we also got, I think Ariana put this question in here about, you know, but seriously, if they're so great at demon hunting, how does the initiative not know who the Slayer is?
Oh, my God. Wow. Seriously. Come on. They're lame. Sorry. They're flops. Nothing more to say.
Okay.
Like, you know who Buffy is, and if you know the supernatural worlds. And you know what werewolves are, so why are you so surprised, psychology teacher? You're like, it was a giant dog. It didn't feel like it was a cover. It felt like she legitimately did not know what a werewolf was. I don't get their deal. This makes no sense. I think, wow, Ariana has a tendency to do this, like blow a big hole in the plot that just allows me to completely lose faith in something that I used to like really get into. So, thanks.
Brittany, how do you feel about them?
Well, I don't necessarily think they're incompetent. I think they're working with what they have, in that they know that vampires exist and they keep finding them. I don't know how they found Spike, though. Maybe he's just obvious and they are watching sewers because they know that they can only come out at night. But
it's the billowing cloak.
You can see that hair from space.
He's a shining beacon.
Yeah, so maybe they're just patrolling graveyards and they've sort of caught on to their patterns and whatnot, and maybe they've just had some luck finding a couple of demons. So incompetent in the way that they don't know about werewolves, I think maybe it's just because they haven't been close enough or, you know, to get one and study it at this point. But as for not knowing about the Slayer, I don't know if they're just not talking, like who's saying stuff. If the only person I think that they could get to say something would be Spike, because he was like talking, mumbling in his sleep and whatnot, and maybe they kind of are aware that a Slayer exists, but they wouldn't necessarily know it's Buffy unless someone that they had captured spilt the beans about it. So I'm okay with them not knowing that Buffy's out there, because that sort of makes sense in my mind.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, as with any television show, but I feel like Buffy in particular, you just kind of have to wait for the plot to develop. I think 9 times out of 10, you're going to get the answers that you want. So just stay tuned and, you know, see how it unfolds.
Sunnydale has what seems like endless amounts of vampires and only one Slayer. So it's very easy to see how one would not expect to find the one when there are gazillion vampires. So it's, you can't miss them, basically. Whereas, you know, the Slayer isn't exactly walking around broadcasting, I am the Slayer, I am the chosen one. So, just food for thought.
Yeah.
Well, it just feels like to me that if they had this whole operation going on, like, they have a lot of resource, they have a lot of people, just someone would have heard something from a demon, even like, you're not from the Slayer's crew, are you? Like, something. Someone would have mentioned something by this point. It seems so weird that they know no hide nor tail. I mean, she's not like going around wearing a mask at night. She's a blonde woman going around staking vampires at night in the graveyard. That's bound to attract at least a minuscule amount of attention from something or someone. It's so weird to me that, I mean, she's fourth year in Sunnydale, and this is still a secret to them. That seems so stupid to me. I hope that they try and write around it.
Her only witnesses end up piles of dust.
I mean, sometimes they run away. One of the vampires from Sunday's crew ran away and is the one that helped Spike get out. I mean, that's a perfect example of the fact that they should have known that there was a Slayer, because don't they even see, like, one of them runs into her as she's chasing after Oz. They once again see her on a Halloween. Like, it feels like they should start to put two and two together that all this is happening. And it happens around Buffy, at least. Maybe just then that they're suspicious, if not that she's the Slayer, that something's going on with Buffy. But they're blind to it.
Well, then this gives Snyder a lot more credit for his job, because Snyder knew everything that was going on. But yeah, I think
because he was in bed with the mayor the whole time.
Oh, the mayor! I'm so glad he's gone.
Thank God he was eaten. Or wait, yeah, no, Snyder was eaten by the mayor, who then blew up. Got it.
Yeah, I think these are all good points, and I'll just say keep watching, and we'll see what happens. But that's it for this episode. I want to jump into favorite scenes really quick. Mine is just Buffy's intro montage at the top of the episode, because it's so funny and she's so cute. She keeps, like, she messes up the soda machine, then she breaks the ice cream machine, and it just, it's so funny. I really delight seeing her from other people's point of view, and they did a great job of, like, then she drops the ice cream. I was so sad about the ice cream. But Caitlin, please talk about your favorite scene.
Okay, so mine is post Spike trying to bite Willow, and like from where you start to them like sitting side by side and Spike being so upset and Willow playing therapist, basically, to the just the such a funny, strange dynamic. Spike is just so upset and Willow is so like, she's trying to figure out what to do. They just have this amazing conversation, like, you know, maybe you got nervous. Let's try again later. Like, it's so good. It's so, such a Buffy moment. I just find it so funny. And he's, and Willow's like, you know, well, I'd never get bit. He's like, oh, I would totally bite you. I thought about it. And she gets like this unexpected perk from me, like, really? After he gives her like the sexy face, like, oh, it is, oh, the best scene. Like, the whole long conversation is amazing. And then she smacks him on the head with the lamp because she's awesome.
So, she finally realizes, oh, wait a second. Let's not try again in half an hour.
So everything about it is perfect. I love that scene.
And James's sexy face, when he has to turn it on for Spike, it's like, oh. He can get it. Oh, God, can he get it?
Yeah, great all around. Brittany, we touched on yours a little bit.
Yeah, so speaking of getting it, Giles had some great sweaters this episode, and they looked even better when he was interacting with Xander, doing their little shtick in Giles' apartment about raising demons and then saving the day. So that was my favorite scene.
But listen, the more sweaters we have, the less forearms we have, so it's a trade-off.
Roll them up. He can roll them.
Oh, he did. He rolled up that turtleneck. And it looked great.
It's so,
God, it's best of both worlds, can I say.
And Mitch, your favorite scene?
I don't know how else to describe this, but the smooth cat transition between partygoer to Secret Service men that they had, because they were just so like, hey, we need you downstairs. Cool. This is a fun party, right? Yeah. Oh, God. Now we're going to go kill some demons. Yes. Yeah, like, they were just so...
And they walk into the secret elevator and...
So casual. And, like, their retinas are being scanned. And they're like, yeah, but what about Buffy, man? Come on. Fill us in. Like, it was just so well written. I loved how just... how cutesy it was, because it was like, oh, yeah, we do this demon hunting thing on the side. And but we still care about, like, you know, the Buffy drama going on right now.
I have to say that transition is really great. And I love how they don't break the conversation. They just kind of keep rolling with it. And you're like, oh, my God, they're the initiative. But they're still talking about Buffy. And yeah, they did a really good job doing that.
It's so Cabin in the Woods. I think that must have come maybe from this scene. I don't know. It'd be funny if it did. Like, the concept of that movie, you know? It's so fabulous.
All right. Favorite lines now. Mine is from Willow to Riley, who says, I'm not saying it's the key to her heart, but Buffy, she likes cheese. And I just really relate to that. I have a shirt that says current mood, anything that involves cheese. And I was really sad that I didn't wear it today, because that would have been so appropriate. But yeah, great line.
Fabulous. You like the melting pot? You need to go to the melting pot if you're not familiar.
I've never been there.
Fondue. Oh, yeah. My God.
Do you fondue? Okay, Caitlin, your favorite line?
So mine is also a Willow line, and it's when she's helping Riley out and she gives him the best friend speech and says, if you hurt her, I will beat you with a shovel. And he kind of gives her a startled look and she says, a vague disclaimer is nobody's friend. Have fun. I love Willow.
Yeah, I love real talk Willow when she's not like nervous and beating around the bush and trying to be kind. She's just like, look, this is how it is. It's great. And Brittany, this was a close second for me, just saying.
When Willow and Spike are having their little heart-to-heart, and Willow's like, you know, this doesn't make you any less terrifying. And Spike turns around, he's like, don't patronize me. Oh, so good. I'm so glad he's back.
Oh, yeah. And Mitch, I mean, I really love yours, too.
You know, we all chose, I'm pretty sure we all chose Willow lines in the bedroom, in the dorm room. That's funny. We did. I chose Willow's line to Spike. I know I'm not the kind of girl, vamps like to sink their teeth into. It's always like, oh, you're like a sister to me, or, oh, you're such a good friend.
And then he talks about the fluffy pink sweater.
Yeah. You gotta love that one.
And he found that really sexy.
Yes.
Yeah, I feel like men find Willow sexy the more clothes she's wearing. Like, I'm never gonna forget when Oz was just like, that Eskimo booty, though. And I was like, I don't get it.
She was really adorable in that huge parka, though.
She was just cute. She was. A little head sticking out, like,
hello. Awesome. Great episode, I think, all around. But let's jump into Angel, episode 107, The Bachelor Party, and see if we like this one just as much. So in this episode, Doyle's wife is back, and we find out the dude's always been insecure because he is basically the demon version of Xander, which explains both why we are convinced he is evil and why Cordy's convinced he's developing a crush, or she's developing a crush. Her new fiancé, this is the wife, new fiancé invites Doyle to his bachelor party so he can eat his brains, but in the end, he gets to live because all the humans agree cannibals are gross. Okay, so let's start this off with what we see at the top of the episode, which is Cordy going on her super hot date with the rich guy, and Angel being like, Adriana wrote the overprotective grandpa, big brother, you know, same thing. It was so funny the way that he was grilling this guy.
I think Angel is just a precious baby, and he wants to protect his bae Cordelia because Adriana is a big shipper for those two. So that's probably where this is coming from.
But it was also nice to see him sort of like, I mean, he is always brooding and everything, and this kind of comes off a little bit funnier. I mean, Angel's funny. Like, he definitely has funny moments, but this felt a little like he was doing it just to needle Cordelia a little bit, and I just, yeah, I really like their dynamic.
I always go back to the, like, I'm a funny guy moment he had in Buffy, like, yeah. Completely deadpan. I'm like, whenever he does something like this, that is exactly that deadpan, I'm a funny guy.
Or like whenever he like lampshades himself with like, you know, you don't just get this good at brooding without a lot of practice kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's true. And you know, unfortunately for Cordelia, her date kind of sucks. He's super boring, and they end up getting attacked by a vampire at the end, and her guy completely runs off, leaves her there, but who's there to save the day but Doyle? And Cordelia feels quite happy that he saved her, obviously, not just because, you know, she's still alive, but because Doyle was there for her, and it wasn't, you know, sometimes he can be weird and sometimes he can be gross, but I think, like, it was, their interactions here are very genuine and real. And I want to know what you guys think about the possibility of Cordelia starting to crush on Doyle. Brittany, how about you start it off?
I think Adriana made a great point in the synopsis where we figure out why Cordy's starting to like Doyle, and it's because he is the Xander. He's so insecure about relationships and his, whether or not people like him. Yes, he has the demon thing going on in this, like, you know, universe, and whereas Xander's just weird. But I really don't want them to be together because I'm going to fall in love with it, and then something's going to go wrong, and it's going to get messy, and I really like this playful thing we have going on right now, especially with Cordelia being all jealous, and, like, when his wife shows up and Angel just sort of like takes it at face value and she's like trying to get him to be surprised and whatever and he's not responding. And I really liked that scene a lot where you kind of want them to be together, but then at the same time, I like the push and pull of their relationship and her still not knowing about the demon thing because she still doesn't know by the end of this episode, does she? Because she hit him.
Yeah.
She beats him and then he comes back with his normal face and she's like, oh, there you are. And so,
what happened to you?
Yeah. So I really like that still going on. But yeah, I think that just made me picture their relationship in a whole different light. By the fact that Ariana pointed out that he is the Xander of the angel world, and it's really, really true.
I like that. I mean, this is strange, but I like that Doyle's fitting within, like, certain characters that I find sexy innately, and one of these is kind of embarrassing, but, like, I like that he's a teacher, for instance. I think that sometimes, like, you know, a really intelligent person teaching a bunch of stuff that is of the man nature can be fun. And then I also like that weird kind of like white trash outfit he has at one point. He's like a white beater and like a shirt open and it's kind of sexy in like a strange way. I don't know why. It's only specifically with Doyle that I found it attractive, but he started to like loosen up a bit in this episode. And as we learned about his past, I was like, I think I could really get behind some Cordelia Doyle now. It seems like he's being less Xander and maybe not more Angel, but just more of his own character. I can see why Adiana is saying he's like Xander a lot, from the fact that he's being disgusting a lot of the time about, you know, women in general or just toward Cordelia, and for the point that he doesn't really seem to have a point a lot of the time, but now he's getting more into it. We have a backstory, and that was important for Doyle here, and mm-hmm. backstories make people sexy.
Yeah, and not even like that. That he is, like, you know, a gross person, but she even called him, like, a fixer-upper, and he really is. And that having this backstory now about how he was a teacher, and he worked at a soup kitchen, and all of this, like, really great stuff. And then for this woman to go and leave, and he always thought it was because of his, like, you know, demon side, and so it sort of explains his spiral, like, you know, like how he got into all this trouble and all this stuff. It gives him a lot of depth as a character, which I really appreciate because I love backstories. They're one of my favorite things about television is learning more about characters. Mm-hmm. And I really think that this put Doyle in a completely new perspective, not only with the Xander stuff, but it sort of points out what Cordelia is drawn to in him is that he is a good guy, like, really deep down. And so is Xander. Xander's a good guy, but he has this front of, like, this weird and gross guy. But the more you get to know him and spend time with him, he is a really good guy who is also, again, preoccupied with something else. This guy, Doyle, just happens to be preoccupied with his demon-ness taking over, whereas Xander's preoccupied with trying to get with every other woman plus Cordelia. So
now speaking of Doyle's past, I'm not sure where he had met Harry or if that was important or anything, because at first I thought it sounded like she had an accent other than an American one, and I wasn't sure if it was meant to be an Irish accent or like a half
kitchen.
Oh, okay. So they did meet in the soup kitchen. You're right. She sounded like she had a bit of an Irish accent when she first came on, the actress, the way she speaks when she's first saying, like, I'm not going to do it because it's going to be horrible. But the way she says hello, Doyle, it has a certain ring to it that it sounds like it's kind of, I don't know. It's just, it felt like she was from a different area other than America to me, the character herself. It felt like she had more to learn about her. She had a certain culture about her. Did you feel the same way, Britt, when she walked onto the scene?
Yeah, I thought she had an accent. And I still feel like she does. Maybe I wasn't paying attention enough to when she was. It was when she was talking to Richard, I think his name was. So is that the other demon, her fiance?
Yeah.
When she was talking to him, I felt like she lost it maybe. But when she was talking to Doyle, especially in that first scene, she really sounded like she had an accent. But you're right. I don't remember it towards the end.
There's something about the hair that kind of screamed like something else. Like, it was a different kind of culture that came along with that hair for some reason. I don't know why. It was just like, I've seen this somewhere else, like this accent, this hairstyle, this way of dress, this way of acting, and I cannot pinpoint it. So I don't know if that's ever even important or revealed, but it was really bothering me that I could not figure out what they were trying to represent with this character.
I honestly don't know. I think maybe it was just the way that she talked. I felt like she had a little bit of a lisp or something like that.
Maybe.
She had a very peculiar way of speaking, but I don't know. I think that's interesting. I think I'm really glad that you guys brought up Doyle's background, just because I think that this has been a long time coming for this character, and I kind of think they waited a little too long to reveal it, because I know there has been a lot of speculation about, you know, whether he's evil or not, and I'm not saying that, oh, all of a sudden now he's not going to be evil. It's just, this definitely humanizes him a little bit and gives him more of a, he's more 3D now, you know, like we kind of see a little bit more of him as a person, and his insecurities are explained, his motivations are explained. He had a whole life before he ever came into this mix, and I find that very interesting, and I'm glad that you guys are into it and kind of maybe see him in a different light now. Of course, we still don't know what direction he's going to go in the future. There are a million different paths that he could take, so that'll be something we'll have to continue waiting for. But up until this point, Caitlin, how do you feel about Doyle, and do you ship Doyle and Cordy?
I don't. Okay. But I don't anti-ship it or anything. I guess for me, I can't help but think, you know, just because he did like nice things like be a teacher in the past doesn't necessarily reflect on the person he is today. Like, I prefer to think about the choices he makes in the present to reflect who he is. Mm-hmm. And some of them have been good, some of them have been not so good. So hearing that he had these things in the past sort of, I guess it makes me more sad than anything, because he left behind these things that, you know, as a half demon, he probably could have kept up doing. Like, and it says a lot about him that he really struggled to keep it, like to reconcile that, especially when for the most part he's able to keep a fairly human appearance, and it really is just like when he sneezes or whatever that he is, like the spikes come out. So he, in that way, is very lucky, probably, compared to other half-demons whose aspects are not, you know, disguisable. So, I don't know. I don't know that I respect him all that much in that regard.
I think that's a really fair point, especially because we've seen, particularly with Angel, you know, he's struggled with who he is too, especially because he has a soul, but he's living with it and he's learning from his mistakes, and he's trying to use what he is as a force for good. And I mean, in a way, Doyle is too, because he's with Angel Investigations, but he has this completely different attitude about himself as a demon. And this episode sort of sets him up to accept that, and yet in the end he doesn't. And I think that's very interesting.
I wonder too, I mean, Caitlin was just speaking of his spikes, if he's going to accept his demon self more, use it more in battle, and if he's going to purposefully impale people using that, kind of like that one guy in X-Men does. I think there's a mutant that does that same. He attacks people by getting up close to them and then activates his spikes. I don't know if they're long enough to hurt someone like that. I don't know.
Dude, Doyle headbutted somebody in this episode, and I know they were like the bad guys, but I felt so bad for him because that had to have hurt so
bad. With the spikes on, right?
Yeah.
Like he was spikified.
Yeah. It was great. I was like, oh man. Ouch.
He's going to have to accept his demon self eventually. That's his arc. I see that coming. And I also see Cordelia being offended that he would hold it back from her as long as he did. And that's going to probably be the end of whatever ship might be sailing here, because she'll feel offended, maybe. I don't know. I'm less on him being evil, more of him just being deceptive in general. So he's also probably hiding something else from Angel. And it still could be a neutral evil thing. It could still be like Adiana presented, like some big bad has, for instance, let's just say maybe a sister held captive and he has to be guiding Angel toward the big bad to save his sister, that kind of deal. That could still happen. But I don't feel he's pure evil anymore because we've heard so much about his backstory, because we heard that he was so pure and good toward Harry. And even here, he's willing to support her when he, I mean, really didn't have a reason to break up with her, I guess, in the end of the day. It's a weird breakup that they had, and it's sad. It did make me feel sadder that he wasn't, that she was willing to have kids with him. That wasn't the issue. She was like, no, I like the diversity and the culture of it all. It was more of just his continuous issue of, I'm embarrassed of being the demon, that split them, and that will, you know, inevitably, in my opinion, not allow him and Cordelia to get together, because she'll just be like, I would have been okay with that if you just told me.
Yeah. And let's talk about Harry for 2 seconds too, because she was pretty cool. And watching this episode again, I couldn't quite remember how it ended up. I knew that her husband was a demon and I knew that twist was coming, but I couldn't quite remember what side of the line Harry was on. And I was like, is she going to be evil by the end? And she wasn't, thank goodness. I was really happy about that. But I really like that, you know, we're meant to not like her at the beginning of the episode. We're meant to believe Doyle when he said, you know, my demon half drove us apart. And then by the end, we realize it drove them apart because of Doyle, not because of Harry. And she went on to learn about all the different cultures and fall in love with another, you know, demon and that sort of thing. And I just really liked her as a character. I thought she was very personable and intelligent, and, you know, she helped them. And in the end, she kind of stood up for her beliefs and stood up for Doyle, even, you know, even though they did grow apart. And I thought that was really nice.
Yeah, I liked Harry, especially because she not only accepted the demon half of him, she found it so interesting that she, like, studies demons now.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how you really make a profession of that. Like, I guess you could mask it. Well, yeah, I guess you could, like, mask it by being something else, but really focusing on, like, oh, yeah, this stuff's totally not real. Ha, ha, ha. And
let me, yeah, like, just folklore actually, or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I was like, how is that profitable? But now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, I guess you could be, like, a professor or, like, a doctor.
Librarian.
Anthropology studies or whatever. I really liked Harry. I didn't see anything wrong with her, especially when she showed up to the bachelor party and they were, you know, trying to eat Doyle's brains. And she even says to him, she's like, well, if you say anything else or whatever, I'll eat your brains myself or something like that.
Yeah.
So, like, she was really awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And I did not like her when she first showed up, just because, you know, we didn't know the whole story about what was going on. And Doyle was clearly bothered that she was there. And we couldn't connect the pieces, especially when that whole scene happened with Angel and Doyle trying to talk with the scotch. And he's like, no, she's right. It makes me, like, a worse person. And I was like, oh, wow, this is, like, getting really deep. And then it turned into this whole demon thing. And she is drawn to that and interested in it. And I think that's an interesting perspective to have in the group, because Cordelia, yeah, she's interested in it. But she does it out of default now, because I think she even brings up the fact that she was, like, scarred by her experience, because now she only wants tough guys. Like, it's not a bad thing to have a preference for, but, you know, it takes a special kind of person to be accepting of that, and for her to not only make a living, but find joy in being with demons, I guess that's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, speaking of Cordelia, I also find it really interesting that, like we talked about before, once again, she doesn't put two and two together and she doesn't realize that Doyle is half demon. And this seems to be a pattern with her, because for so long she rejected the idea that Angel was anything other than human. And I think it's a very interesting path to have this character walk down, because she is constantly surrounded by the supernatural. She knows it exists, and yet she kind of doesn't believe it when it's that close. And I wonder if it's because she sees these people as human, and she doesn't, you know, she trusts them, and she doesn't believe that they could possibly be dangerous, or if this could be a product of, you know, something else. Because for better or for worse, like, I don't think that Cordelia is stupid by any means, but she can be quite oblivious. But I see it as sort of an innocent, kind of naive way of going about it. What do you guys think?
I love that idea that she maybe is focused on the humanity of the people around her. And so the, like, demonic side is almost irrelevant if she can focus on that. Mm-hmm. Human side, because that's what matters to her. I love that.
Thank you. I mean, especially her interactions with Angel, you know, she does really see him in that way, and she feels for him. And I think Buffy does too, in a way, because she knows the kind of person Angel is. But there's been times in the past where she worries about, you know, what direction he's going to go in and that sort of thing. And Cordelia it's always felt a lot more innocent to me.
I think it's a good trait for both of them to have. However, it makes it even more frustrating to the point where, like, Cordelia is such a superficial person with the guy she chooses. So, like, she is now going out with this other guy just because he has a great job and good hair and can afford the Mercedes made-up class that she said. And, you know, it's like, and then you have Buffy, who is drawn to the good guy act. So it's great that they see the humanity in these demons, and that's wonderful because we like the demons as characters. But it just totally discredits every other person that they're trying to bring into their lives, which is making it almost even more frustrating for me to watch, because I do like your point a lot, Karen, about that her seeing the humanity in Angel and Doyle, and that's why she's not picking up on this other stuff. But then for her to, like, look at someone else and just see the superficial stuff and not be able to get a read on anyone, is it because she's drawn to a certain, like, weird, mythical, like, complicated person, and just these other guys just don't have any substance? I don't know how to differentiate it.
I think either way, we can definitely say that at this point she's changing. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's basically what this episode established for her, that she's changing. She doesn't like what she liked before. And I think that is very interesting in and of itself, and we'll have to see kind of how that comes about and what path that leads her down. And one final thought for this episode is what we end the episode on, which is Doyle having a vision of Buffy. And that's all very interesting and mysterious. Do you guys have any theories about that?
Well,
I guess that means a crossover episode next week now, doesn't it?
Yeah, and honestly, I'm not psyched about it, because Buffy for a couple weeks it dragged a bit for me, and then Spike came back, and it felt like at the end of this episode it was getting good, and I was excited to see where the characters were going. And Angel has been just, I've liked episode after episode after episode since the Buffy crossover, and I've been very happy with the way it's been establishing itself separate from Buffy, and I'm so mad that they're coming back together already. I just wanted more time with them separated. It just, no, well, I feel like it's going to hit a pause, and it's going to be like a hurdle to jump over, because I'm very happy with the way Angel is going, and I just got excited about Buffy again, and now I feel like I have to hit pause and watch this little thing and then try to get back into each show individually again.
That's, do you think that we're going to have any more Oz story with an Angel? I don't think he's going to be involved in the show. I don't see his name being attached to it very often, unfortunately, so that's just a thing that I know pop culture-wise. And that's unfortunate, I think, as a newbie, that sometimes we just happen to know, like, for instance, that Angel had his own TV show when we first started Buffy, so whatever. Regardless, though, I feel like
You did. Maybe I did not know that Angel had his own TV show.
Yeah, that's true.
Started.
You didn't even know. And I was like, how didn't you? I mean, you did it for like 7 years. No, I feel like this could really have something to do with the initiative that we might get into that, Britt. So that'd be good. You might appreciate it then, because it's not putting it on pause. That's having Angel come over and perhaps, I mean, I don't know if he's, that's the thing. I don't know if they're going to guest star on each other's show yet. They might be saving that for finale episodes. I feel like they might have, maybe Doyle will go over there for some stupid reason, or Cordelia might come back for something good, or I just can't see Angel going to Buffy or Buffy going to Angel quite yet. But if she seemed like she's in danger, that might be enough to make Angel go back to Sunnydale for a little bit.
Yeah, I don't need them interacting, because then it's like, it's another 6 weeks of, oh, Buffy, oh. And you know they're going to see each other. He has his, her has his bookmark. Even that drove me a little crazy. I just want them to exist in their own worlds, because I like Angel without Buffy. I'm not, I feel bad for everyone who likes them together. I apologize. I really like Angel without Buffy, and I'm just getting on the Angel train, and I'm liking it, and I'm not complaining that Angelus isn't around anymore, and now you gotta go and throw this crossover in my path. It's just, I can't win with you Buffy people.
Well, this might solidify Spike's purpose in Buffy also, because it might show him and Angel interacting toward a greater good together. Perhaps the initiative, fighting it together, and then Spike saying, this good guy thing is kind of cool, let's do it.
Oh, and then Buffy saying, cool, I'll watch after him, Angel.
You know what I mean?
No, come on. It's not, you're just making my hopes and dreams become more dust-like than shattered glass by saying that Spike turns good in the next episode. I can't.
It has to be, because he can't hurt anyone, and there's a crossover episode, and only it has to happen.
No.
I feel like this is the way it has to go, because what else is he going to do? Unless they just don't show him. If they don't show him, then I'm completely wrong. But if he's, the next time he's shown, I believe he's going to be turning good. I don't know what more there's left for his character to do bad right now.
Caitlin,
other than Kill Harmony.
Caitlin, I want you to chime in on the Buffy Angel thing. Do you have any thoughts?
I mean, that's my ship. That will always be my ship. That's been my ship since I was little. And Brittany and I have disagreed on shipping before, and I'm sure we'll disagree on
every single rewatchable we've been on.
I'm interested to know if you like them having some breathing room, or if you think they should just come together more often.
I mean, I quite enjoy the crossovers very much. I like seeing them. Like, it's showing that they are in each other's universe, and I like seeing that the effects of one can relate to the other. Mm-hmm. So I like seeing that shared universe explored. And so it'll be interesting to see how it pans out. Obviously, I know how it pans out. But I mean, I'll be interested what Brittany thinks once she sees how it pans out. I'll put it that way.
Does Angelus come back?
No comment.
But, yeah, I'll give you this much, Britt. Like, I might start to get some fatigue from the crossover episodes if it feels like the shows can't live independent of each other, especially if Angel can't live independent of Buffy without a crossover episode, nothing important happens. If that happens, I will not be happy. I do think Angel has the legs to do something important without a crossover episode, but you're right, because I think this starts to concern me that they're like, God, it only really matters when Buffy's involved. It's like, we should have characters like that by now on Angel, given that Buffy's first season, wasn't it 7 episodes or 12 or 13? I feel like at this point, Buffy had stronger legs than Angel does.
Mitch, that's just... you interrupted me.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Caitlin. Go ahead.
I wasn't done.
I thought you were. Go ahead.
I said, but I don't feel like we got closure with Angel on Buffy. So I'm waiting to see if we will get that with in a crossover that would be required. That's what I was going to finish with.
Yeah, no, that is true. You're very right on that. His walk off into the mist and her sending the ring wasn't really closure.
Exactly, and I don't know how the cross or the spinoff can really develop its own legs until we've actually gotten a full sense of closure of right. one character from the other show. And I don't right. feel like we have gotten that yet. And I think it takes a crossover to get that. And I think there is mm-hmm. purpose in seeing an earlier crossover showing that, hey, there isn't that closure for that. So I think that lack of closure is purposeful. So I'm waiting to see when or if we do get it. And I think getting it would help Angel, the show, establish itself better.
And like, why? Well, it could be argued we needed to close off Buffy Angel before he left to do his own show. That's not exactly what I'm arguing. I can see that being presented, but I'm like, eh, on that. I think that it's important that where we are now is, you're right, Caitlin, like he sits there and looks at a picture of Buffy and he's shocked and, you know, kind of like, oh my God, like seeing her even still does it for me. So there definitely needs to be something there to close that off. I don't know where I sit in the camp. I mean, Britt, do you feel like we should have closed off Angel before we left for Angel in general?
I think it should have closed off in the first crossover episode in order yeah. to give these two shows room to breathe and grow and not have, I guess, though it kind of explains, I take that back what I'm saying. I do think that we should have closed it off in the first crossover episode because then Buffy's whole moving on thing with Parker and then
with Parker
now with now. Riley yeah. and just like, you know, having a good time and just going out and dancing and being able to focus on Willow and putting all of that Angel stuff behind her now would feel like progress, and it does feel like progress, but now to have Angel come back, it feels like a step backwards. So if we had gotten closure earlier, that would have been fine. But since that is, like Caitlin brought up, still sort of lingering there, and it's not signed, sealed, delivered, and we're not able to move on in these separate paths yet, then yeah, it is something that needs to be dealt with, and I guess season four, having two crossovers, or maybe more, we're only on episode 8,
will
be, like, you know, a good time to have it would be now instead of, like, waiting, oh, it's season 5, we still haven't closed this chapter yet. Oh, it's season 6, we still haven't closed this chapter yet. So, yeah, I guess having another crossover this soon makes sense in that regard, but I was just personally feeling like the shows were taking those steps to move apart, and it felt good, and I liked what they were both doing, and now they're coming back together. So hopefully it won't be awful, but, and it wraps up. That would be my ideal.
Yeah. It's funny. I mean, ship it or not. Like, if you think about it, Angel is almost the center of the universe in terms of the Buffyverse because it creates these two different shows, and it's what starts a lot of the drama again right now, even for us. And it's silly that it feels that way to me because I feel like I didn't notice that before. But the Angel, ship it or not, it's just damn important. And it's going to be really, really important to see how it closes off, probably inevitably in this upcoming crossover, in my opinion.
I don't know what you mean by Angel, but okay. So anyway, moving on. I do actually agree with Caitlin on this stance, but I think, like, as I always say to the newbies, just be patient and see how it turns off or turns out. You might be pleasantly surprised. And this whole Buffy and Angel thing, Buffy and Angel is important. And I think that, you know, whether or not you really ship it, you do have to kind of see what they mean to each other and kind of wait and see how that plays out. But that's for the future. That's for next week. We'll see what happens. Let's jump into our favorite scenes and favorite lines right now. Mine was pretty easy. Cordy being bored on her date because I thought that was hilarious. My real favorite scene was actually the one that Caitlin stole. So why don't you jump into that one?
I mean, I got into the doc first.
Yeah.
So. Mine was clearly the best scene when we have the family of demons having their casual discussion over the dinner table of how the bachelor party's going to go. And it's like the whole conversation is like these such square people, like, you know, we're going to play darts and then we're going to have the stripper. Like, he's like, oh, stripper, blah, blah. And then, like, then we're going to eat the ex-husband's brain and then play charades. And the hang-up is the charades part.
Yes.
Like, it's just so good. everything about it. It's just so hilariously casual. It's so great.
They did that so well. That was almost my favorite line, but then I saw this was your favorite scene. I was like, I'm just going to give it to Caitlin. We'll still discuss it because it'll be great. But when he was like, whoa, wait a second, charades? I don't know about that. I just died. And Brittany, your favorite scene?
Mine was just Angel throughout the episode trying to be a good friend, but also failing at reading every single situation that he was involved in. So, like, when Doyle introduces his wife, he's just like, oh, hey, how you doing? How's it going? And Cordelia's like, excuse me? Like, is anyone else surprised by this? And just Angel finally becoming a character that I like. And he's been so funny. I watched 2 Angel episodes in a row, and it was amazing.
Awesome. And Mitch?
Mine is Doyle's reaction to seeing Harry again, because he is adorkable. The way he's all, like, smitten by her, and he's so proud to show her off, and it's just so damn cute. And I especially love Richard's reaction to seeing Angel, being like, damn, he hot. And then Harry's like, oh, and Doyle's like, oh, it's me, hello, White Peter over here.
He's like, oh, that explains everything. That makes more sense.
Doyle was so offended. It was great.
I mean, Angel's really pretty, and everyone has to admit that as soon as they see him, they're like, oh my god, that coat.
I love that it's this ongoing joke of, like, he's so handsome.
And like, Angel is always so bemused by it, because yeah. He cannot look in the mirror and see that he's good looking.
I know, I wish so. Oh, he could take a picture. We've learned they can't take pictures, so he can definitely see himself if he really cared.
All right, favorite lines. Like I said, I did love the part around the dinner table, but another great one was when, Cordelia was sort of pretending, you know, what if they got attacked? What would this guy that she was going on a date with do? You know, he'd throw his shoe at him and run away. And she just says, turns out the shoe part was giving him too much credit, because that dude peeled out of there and just left Cordelia for dead. And it was so funny. Good thing that they ended up taking care of that. And vampire dude is dead now. Caitlin, your favorite line.
So mine was at the bachelor party, and Harry is confronting the demon family for their brain-eating beliefs, and she's not happy about it. And Uncle John says, we don't flaunt our beliefs, but they're very near and dear to us. And Harry goes, oh, please, Uncle John, when's the last time you pried yourself away from ESPN long enough to spill the blood of a she-goat? Oh, she knows it. She knows their beliefs, and, like, she wouldn't care about the spilling the blood of a she-goat. It's the brain eating. Yeah. When did you last spill the blood of a she-goat? You're stuck on ESPN.
Yes. Harry 1, Uncle John 0. Brittany, your favorite line?
Mine was from Cordelia, who said to Doyle, hi, Doyle, are you going to become a loser pining guy, like, full-time now? Because, you know, we already have one of those around the office.
And they both go, hey!
Yeah. But it's so true. And then she says more than that in that whole scene, but that whole exchange is just so good. Because she's, like, basically says, like, well, Angel can pull it off.
Yeah. That's true. Doyle just kind of looks pathetic when he does it. And Mitch, what's your favorite line?
Mine's at the bachelorette party. It's before Harry and Cordelia go off to save Angel and Doyle. And it's when our Aunt Martha character says, well, they're certainly not going to eat your ex-husband's brains, for instance. And then the two girls run off and she's like, what?
Subtle, Aunt Martha. Real subtle. Way to cover.
Seriously.
Jeez, Aunt Martha.
Gosh. All right. Well, that takes us to the end of Angel and the end of our episodes for this week. So as usual, if you would like to get in contact with us, please email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter at re_watchable. find us on this post on hypeable.com or find us on rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. As usual, please keep it spoiler-free for the newbies. And we really love iTunes reviews, and we really appreciate it when you guys can give us 5 stars. So if you rate us 5 stars, then I will throw you a killer bachelor party.
Ba-dum-ching.
I can't promise strippers, though. I don't know how I feel about that.
What about charades?
Charades? That's another one. I'm not so sure.
What about that chocolate rum cake from last week?
I will bring the chocolate rum cake to the killer bachelor party.
Perfect.
Yes. Brains included. Just kidding. Okay, let's jump into listener feedback now. Brittany, can you grab this first one from Twitter?
Sure. Lucas Graydon at Lucas_Graydon says, I love when I finish an episode on Netflix and the up next picture spoils a major part of the next episode. Upside down face, sad smiley face, crying emoji. Yes, I agree, because when you watch Buffy before you watch Angel, and the picture in the next episode coming up next is Angel and Buffy together, and then you watch Angel and then he has the vision, not a good time.
As soon as credits start playing, I shut that shit down. I do not let that happen.
It wasn't. It's like it's as soon as the guitar hits, it shrinks, and then the next episode.
Oh,
is
I know.
There. And
I'm like, trigger finger. I'm like waiting for the final zinger.
I cannot avert my eyes that quickly, and I don't. Every week a listener says, "Just turn off autoplay." Listen, Buffy and Angel are not the only things I'm watching on here, so I'm not turning off autoplay to watch Buffy and Angel and then turning it back on to watch 25 episodes of Bob's Burgers. That's just not how my life
works. Oh, God.
That's so funny. Yeah, good point, good point. And I mean, even like just the art for the shows in general being spoilery is kind of frustrating, but, you know, most people have seen
like
these shows.
Super spoilery. It's horrible.
So, unfortunately for rewatchable newbies, it's a little tough. But
spoilers over a decade old.
Yeah. I mean, but we are trying to keep our newbies in a bubble, and sometimes that can be hard. Okay, next tweet. Caitlin, you want to grab this one?
Sure. Dan, who's at It's Real Dan Smith, says, just started rewatching Buffy Angel to follow along with Rewatchable. I kind of forgot how great they are. So good. That clapping or hugging emoji. Oh, so
the hands out, yeah. It's like, but, yay.
Happy in some way emoji. And yes, they are great. I'm so glad you're joining us, Dan.
Yes, thank you so much. We really appreciate it. Please keep writing in. We love hearing from you guys. And our last tweet, Mitch, you want to grab this one?
This comes from Susan Loins, or Lyons. I remember you, Susan. Don't worry. At Ruri_Kaochu. And just spell it however you want. You'll find her. She said, OMG, you guys, hashtag Disney gargoyles is amazing. Nothing to do with Hunchback. Based on Celtic, Shakespearean, Arthurian love. Arthurian.
Lord.
Arthurian? Arthurian. You got it.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. I thought it was all about, like, you know, those sassy gargoyles in Hunchback of Notre Dame, but guess not.
No, they're crime-fighting, good gargoyle things. It's quite fun. After that episode, I went and watched the theme song intro video, yeah, and flashed back to my childhood. It
oh
was
my gosh.
Great times.
My brother and I used to watch that all the time. I wish I was on last week.
Hey, like, they want us to do it, so maybe we'll end up doing it. Who knows?
Is it like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and like Power Rangers kind of tone? Like they joke around, but they're still getting serious every once in a while.
You should watch the opening credits. I'll send them to you when this is over.
Yeah.
Kind of like DuckTales, maybe? Or
it's in the same era as that.
All right. Last comment comes from Hypeable from House of Black, who says, oh, you heartless podcasters, weeping over the quote-unquote tragedy of the Oz-Willow breakup and completely ignoring the fact that Oz just committed murder. The show ignored the killing, too, but I was left wondering how they accounted for Veruca's body in the lab and Oz leaving town when the police will want to talk to him. Although I loathed Veruca, she was a person with friends and family, yet she was treated by the show as if she was a disposable vampire whose dust can be swept away in the trash. I don't like seeing women killed in shows as if it's no big deal. Much more angst was spent on the show when Faith killed the mayor's aide, and he wasn't a nice person either. I think this is a fair point, and something we definitely did not talk about during this episode. I think that the fact that they ignored the body and that sort of thing is very interesting. And I've noticed sometimes that the show tends to leave plot points hanging and you kind of just have to fill in the holes, which isn't necessarily a good thing, but it does happen from time to time. I will say, and Ariana brought this up too in her little editor's note here, that Veruca was attacking them and that Oz killed her in self-defense. And I think that Veruca was sort of a loose cannon, not that that necessarily means she had to die, but I see it a little bit in a different light instead of like she was ruthlessly murdered in that, you know, Oz did defend himself and was trying to save Willow from what Veruca was doing. Does anybody see that differently?
I mean, it makes sense. I'm with Ariana.
Yeah. And also the comparison to the mayor's aide is a little difficult because we're under the impression he was going to them with some information. Mm-hmm. So it seemed like he might have been switching sides, whereas Veruca was really trying to murder Willow.
Yes. Yeah. That's a good point. But thank you for bringing it up.
There was enjoyment taken. Like, Faith kind of liked killing him. It was a turn for her character. She had guilt from it, but she was always saying, it was fun, I liked it, I'll do it again. And she did. She did kill a lot more people after that.
Yeah. I do think that the attitude that Faith had was different from the attitude that Oz had. Clearly, he was not reveling in it at all. He felt very guilty about it, and that was one of the reasons why he decided to leave as well. But thank you for bringing it up, and I'm glad we got to talk about it a little bit. And let us know what you think of that discussion. We're going to leave off this episode with Mitch's musings. Brittany, as always, feel free to jump in on this. So we've got Buffy, 408 Pangs, and Angel, 108, I Will Remember You.
Okay, Britt. Pangs rhymes with fangs. It cannot get any more emo. It's talk about Angel's away status. This episode title, along with the Angel episode title, sound like Angel away statuses from AOL Instant Messenger again. Like, we know it's a crossover, so Pangs, like, what's really going to happen that isn't already stated that we said before? Like, they're going to see each other, it's going to hurt, maybe it'll, like, I don't know, maybe he'll be so miserable that he'll lose his soul again. Is that possible to go the opposite direction? I don't know. Do you have any more things on, like, than we've already said for that episode specifically?
For Pangs, no. Someone's heart will hurt in a good or bad way.
Is there a supernatural panging? Like, you know what I mean? Like, like a monster makes your heart pang even more. To pang. Sounds like we're saying Topanga or something. God.
I don't think so. I mean, I'm sure they're going to reunite and it's going to be interesting.
But they're fighting the Initiative, right?
Probably.
And now I'm starting to think maybe Angel really is in this episode. I think David does come over to Buffy again.
That well, must the be vision, that. The vision was Buffy fighting. It wasn't, I feel like, maybe she was just about to be taken.
Yeah.
It looked like she was just, like, you know, on normal patrol in that vision. But she's clearly in danger because Doyle had a vision about it, so maybe she does get captured and Angel has to go get her, and then he has a lot of heart pangs. Even though his heart doesn't beat.
Banging, I don't know.
Oh, but his heart doesn't beat, so maybe his heart starts beating and then he becomes a human and then he has literal heart
pangs. Like the Grinch?
Yes, like the Grinch. And Angel's heart grew 3 sizes that day.
Oh, God. Okay. So this one's even worse, guys. Angel 108, I will remember you. Are you kidding me, guys? No. This cannot be a title of an episode. That is 10,000% ridiculous, and it is so Angel. Oh, my God. I cannot wait. I cannot wait.
I'm really hoping that it gives me a new thing to associate with the Sarah McLachlan song besides Dying Animals. So
listen, that song. No, that's an inside joke. I was on an airplane with a lot of turbulence, and I wrote to my friend, remember, you have to sing I Will Remember You at my funeral. Like, I always, that's a thing. Like, I tell my friends, this is the song you're going to sing when I'm dead. So now that it's like an Angel episode, I'm just expecting a music video within the episode, kind of like a really cheesy 90s rock, like, with really bad, like, splashy color effects over everything, and it's going to be like,
listen, if I all didn't get my Jane Austen, throughout the years. If I didn't get my Jane Austen Sense and Sensitivity crossover episode, then we're not getting a 90s music video episode of
Well, no, I'm even saying this could be this really could be a Clips episode, a Reels episode, where they just show the best of Angel. Oh, that would be so painful. That'd be even more painful than pangs. Oh, God. I really hope it's not. I hope if they have a Clips episode in the first season of Angel, that is ridiculous. Let's just hope that's not it.
Okay,
so Mitch's name is wrong this time.
You guys are predicting lots of angst. That's what I've taken away.
So much angst.
It's Buffy and Angel. It's just, it's all angst.
Of course. It is.
It is the most angst you could possibly feel.
Yes. Okay. That is fair enough. All right. Well, once again, that has been Rewatchable, discussing Buffy and Angel. Thank you guys so much for listening in. And until next week, I'm Karen.
I'm Caitlin.
I'm Brittany.
And I'm Mitch.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I will remember you.
No. Da, da, da. Okay.